You're with Cape Talk.
22 minutes past four, the book review, The Thriller, is a relatively new one by Irish writer Adrian McKinty. Adrian McKinty left Northern Ireland, where he was born and grew up and started his writing career a few years ago, and he's been writing sort of international thrillers. I do think that his Sean Duffy series, there were six in that series, and Sean Duffy was a policeman in Belfast at a time when Catholic and Protestant tensions were pretty raw, and I thought those books were wonderful. I've been less impressed by his standalones, Hidden River, 50 Grand, Falling Glass, The Sun Is God, and The Chain. His latest, though, The Island, is not bad. I can see it's the kind of book that is quite easily going to be optioned into a movie, and I think it'll make a successful movie. He lives most of the time these days in Australia, and this book has Americans coming to Australia and getting caught up in stuff. Heather Baxter marries Tom, and they move from Seattle to Melbourne for a conference, because he's a leading medical person. He's due to deliver a keynote speech. And they decide, the children are unhappy that they cooped up in a sort of resort, and they decide on a whim to go and discover a remote island. It's generally off limits to outside visitors, but they talk their way onto the ferry that is going across to the island. So they let's have an adventure. Let's have an adventure that can't be covered by Instagram and iPhones. But they then set foot on the island, and the island is owned by and run by a tight-knit clan of locals, a family that suggests the kind of family that was active in a movie like Deliverance. These are not kind and educated people. Something bad goes wrong, and the family is then hunted, and they have to survive. And this is an island which is not terribly big. It is an island which is absolutely foreign to them. They don't know where to get food. They don't know where to get water. They don't know where to hide. And the people who are looking for them are looking for them with murderous intent, because of the reason why they are looking for them, which I don't want to give away because it's a bit of a plot spoiler. So it's really taut, it's suspenseful, it's well written, it's a little incredible, as these kind of books tend to be, but they ask you to suspend belief, and I was very, very willing to do so and enjoyed it thoroughly, and look forward to the Netflix series or the Showmax series or whatever it's going to be. Adrian McKinty, The Island. And then Think of Me by Francis Liardet, which is not so much a sequel, but it's a kind of, in a way, a follow-on from an earlier book of hers of a couple of years ago, We Must Be Brave, because one of the central characters of We Must Be Brave also features prominently on the pages of Think of Me. And I wouldn't call it literary fiction. It's not historical fiction. It's fiction which is touching, moving, sad, poignant, meaningful. And the central character is James Atkin. And we meet him in 1974. He's a priest, and he's taking on a new parish in the small town village of Upton in the UK. And he was one of the members of that generation who offered themselves up to fight in the Second World War. He's not somebody who would brag about that, like many people, like my father, who fought in the Second World War. They simply don't talk about it. It was something that they did. It was something that needed to be done, but it's not something that is needed to be talked about. He's an upright person. He's modest. He's decent. He was a pilot in the Royal Air Force, and he met his future wife, Yvette. He was stationed in North Africa at the time. He was shot down. He became a prisoner of war. He survived, and then he married Yvette and became a vicar in the south of England. And so the second book, Think of Me, goes back between the early days of their relationship, because he has access to Yvette's notebooks, and so it's the present and the past. And those diary entries give her side of the relationship, and also contain details of an event which was really seminal for their relationship, the miscarriage of their first child. And the schism that that event caused and his inability to deal with it and his subsequent honesty about his shortcomings and the revelation of some of Yvette's secrets, these all come together to form something which is quite a hard to categorize book. But Ellen Parr, who was the central figure in We Must Be Brave, takes, as I said, a big role here as well. She befriends the new Victor, she offers wisdom and more, and it's so knowing about the harmonics and interstices of a small town, and very knowing and very kind and very empathetic about how humans behave and misbehave. I found it an enormously sympathetic read. It's called Think of Me by Frances Liardet, Liardet. And then the non-fiction book is called Planta Sapiens. So not Homo Sapiens, wise man, but Planta Sapiens, wise plants. And it's written by a Spanish philosopher, I suppose he would describe him as, Paco Calvo. He's a professor of the philosophy of science at something called the Minimal Intelligence Laboratory at the University of Murcia in Spain. And he is posing the question and answering it in the affirmative from his point of view, can plants be regarded as possessing intelligence? And he says, yes, they can. And these are the experiments that prove to me that plants can possess intelligence. He says that we like to think that the world revolves around us. All of the philosophical arguments about the nature of consciousness historically have fixed consciousness to the human experience. But he says intelligence is not quite as special as we like to think, and argues that perhaps we must now accept other organisms, and even organisms that are as dramatically different from humans as are plants, may be capable of intelligence. And one of the historical bits of evidence that he cites is a letter that Charles Darwin wrote to a friend in 1863, because he was sick for several weeks, so had to stay in bed. And he wrote to a friend, I'm getting very much amused by my tendrils, because he was studying the movements of cucumber plants on his windowsill. And he says, because he was convalescing, he was forced to live more slowly. He was forced to become more plant-like. And therefore the stillness of his opened his mind to the wonder of his vegetable companions. And as Calvo writes, it allowed him to see them more on their terms, to experience plant life at plant pace. And so part of the book is philosophical and part of it is scientific, as he describes the experiments that to him reveal the remarkable range of plants. They communicate with others. They use something called chemical talk. So when you smell newly mown grass, that very particular smell of grass which has just been cut, that is a chemical signal that the grass which has been cut is sending out to other grass nearby, saying, watch out, there is a predator in the environment. Trees in your part of the world, George, when they are nibbled by kudu and by a giraffe, they send out signals to other trees saying, watch out, animals are trying to eat us. And so there are lots more of these, you know, plants retaining a memory of where the sun will rise. So, and you put them in the dark for a long time and then you bring them out and they know immediately where the sun is going to rise. And before the sun rises, they are turning their faces in that direction. So he argues that is not a particularly sophisticated form of memory, but it is a form of memory. I'm not sure I was wholly convinced by his arguments, but certainly he demands that you take them seriously. The book is called Planta Sapiens, with the subtitle Unmasking Plant Intelligence, and it's by Paco, P-A-C-O, Calvo, C-A-L-V-O.